Keith Roth and Mark Voger hitting commercials. We'll be right back.
Ian McLagan of the Small Faces, The Faces, and you're lucky enough to be listening to Keith on Electric Ballroom.
What a drag it is getting old.
Mother's Little Helper from the Stones here in the Electric Ballroom. It's Keith Roth hanging out with my partner in crime, Mark Voger, talking about his phenomenal new book, Britmania, The British Invasion of the 60s in Pop Culture. As I said earlier, and with all Mark's books, when you read this book, if you experienced it, it'll bring back fond memories. And if you weren't there by reading his books, you'll wish you were there. Now, we first met on the ballroom. You know, you, your wife, Kathy, used to come down when we'd have some guests and, you know, you would do stories and take pictures. And then, of course, you know, finding out and seeing what kind of great journalist you were and, you know, knowing that you've put out books, we've had you on as a co-host. I mean, so I'm doing the math. I think this might be your sixth time on here. Is that about right?
Fifth or sixth. But of course, Kathy and I eavesdropped on ballroom shows probably another 10 times or 12 times. And the very first day that I met you, also in the room was John Entwistle of the great bassist for The Who. So, yeah, that was the first time I checked out the ballroom. And, you know, my Lord, I mean, to, you know, there he was with all of his rock star presence, you know.
Do you remember the drink that he was serving up that night?
Keith, I put that recipe in Britmania. And I quoted you as calling it the drink of death, but it was you pour a bottle of cognac into a pot of coffee, liberally add cream and sugar. And that night you braved it. I didn't, because silly me, I was on duty and we're never allowed to. I should have made an exception. Oh, John Entwistle mixed it. Of course you could drink.
Yeah, like who would get mad at you? I mean, John Entwistle from The Who, in some eyes, the greatest bass player that ever walked planet Earth, is offering you a drink. I do remember that I did have my car there and I had to call my buddy Pete to give me a ride home. Because after that second one, I was like, you know, having the best time with him. And he was such a great guy. He came down, I think, one or two more times after that. My last memory of John Entwistle was really, we did a thing for ballroom listeners, the winners, that you can go to John Entwistle's soundcheck at the Stone Pony in Asbury Park. So I went over with the band to the Stone Pony after we finished the interview at WRAT. And at that point, DVDs were becoming really fashionable and people were really starting to collect. And me and John were in the back of the bus talking about, well, what'd you get? You know, and I was telling him, and I said, I just scored The Last Man on Earth, you know, the Vincent Price, because we were both fans of the Omega Man. And he goes, oh, he goes, I've been looking for that one. He goes, can you get me one? And I said, well, it's at the Wiz. I think I paid like $5 for it. I go, but the next time I go there, I'll grab you one. And I went to the Wiz, used to be in Monmouth Mall, and I grabbed a copy for John Entwistle. And I'm like, hey, next time I see him. And sadly, I never had that opportunity to give it that DVD to John. You know.
Wow. Hey, I'm going to read you a quote real quick.
Sure.
Because you were saying the last time you talked to John Entwistle, I talked to him a week before he died.
Wow.
Because The Who were on.
And this is in the new book, Britmania, right?
Yeah, it's in the new book. So anyway, this quote is, I think it's edifying for ballroom listeners. This is something he said about Who relations in the year that he died, which was 2002. Oh, we get along fine. Well, we get on better when we're playing in front of an audience. You know, we've been friendly for a long time now, 40 years. It's terrifying. So we kind of know each other pretty well. We know each other's sore points and how to make each other happy, I guess. So that was kind of sweet, because there were times earlier when he said, you know, a Who reunion is 110% out of the question, you know. And I remember one time he said to you, you were asking him on the air, you and Amy were asking him about, like, you were saying, like, so when you talk with Pete Townsend, blah, 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 and John Entwistle said, you don't talk with Pete Townsend. You listen to him.
I do remember that. You know, that was a fun night. That was a late night at the that went into the wee hours of the morning, if I'm not mistaken. Sunday night, I think it was winter at the first time, the middle of winter. We were all out in the back puffing cigarettes and drinking that drink of death, the John Entwistle drink of death. And, you know, it was just great. And I just was on Steve Longo. He has a podcast. You should connect with Steve, because he should have you on for, you know, for the book Britmania. But bringing back those memories. And then the last time I actually saw Steve, he plays with Robin Zander. And I coaxed Robin Zander to play the Brighton Bar when they were in town in Longo. And the, now, sadly, the late, great Marquette, who just passed away, was part of the Robin Zander Band. Longo does a great podcast, and I would check it out. And there was a cool episode where we discussed some of the Entwistle days and the Zander days. Now, you know, of course, going through your book, you have all these great interviews. You got interviews with members of the Stones and the Animals. Was there anybody that you didn't get that you wanted?
There were. I got every major British Invasion band, some members from every band except for two. I didn't get anybody from Jerry and the Pacemakers. Jerry just died 2 years ago now. And I didn't get anybody from the Dave Clark Five. Dave Clark is still alive. But I tried and I just never got them. But every other band, Kinks, Yardbirds, Zombies, Beatles, Stones, who, they're well represented in exclusive interviews. Yeah.
Now I'm hearing that our good friend Dave Davies living in Jersey now.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's way up north. Yes, somebody I know. Apparently he's doing great. I mean, you know, he had a stroke a few years back and it was, you know, pretty bad. I have a friend who interviewed him up there and said he's got a great life, looks great, moves well, has a great girlfriend. Like, you know, this is now going back about 3 or 4 years. Anything can change. But last I heard, Dave Davis is doing really good.
Yeah, he's done the ballroom pretty recently up until the world turned into a 70s sci-fi film. But I remember, you know, not long after he had the stroke, it was really hard to hear him. And then I probably interviewed him maybe one or two more times after that. And you heard the progression in his voice and how he was starting to come around. And that's one band, man. I would love to see them get back together and play. You know, the older I get, the more I appreciate everything the Kinks did.
Oh, yeah. I know I saw them a couple of times. I saw them at my alma mater, the college formerly known as Glassboro State. And I actually...
Rowan.
Yeah, Rowan, yeah. Dan Rowan University. I saw them. I saw the low budget tour, and mm-hmm. That was a great tour, especially if you're into Dave Davis's guitar, because he was like a guitar hero on that tour. He was really playing distorted, pulling the notes. He was just really getting in there, you know.
I mean, Punk Rock had a huge influence on that album, the low budget album. They became. I mean, that to me, that's an amazing record. I mean, that's got Attitude on it and Gallon of Gas. You want to feel what it was like living in 1979. You listen to that low budget record. That was great. So you get to see him on that tour. Must have been incredible.
Yeah, and I knew the album, but like live, he must have just really gotten it right, because especially the title track, all those riffs.
Yeah.
I think they even extended it a little because he was just doing so well. It's just like, and in Philly, we go nuts. And yeah. everybody was like, yeah, you know, because it really was like, I was like, I never knew. I mean, I knew he was a legendary guitar player, but holy cow, was he good.
And what a nice guy. What a great guy.
Yeah.
He is.
Yeah.
Well, you've had a good relationship with Eric Burdon throughout the years, you know, the Animals, right? I mean, you guys go way back.
Well, yeah. I mean, I only really interviewed him once. I have to say, he was a fantastic, like, he was so sweet. He was so forthcoming. He didn't act like, oh, I'm so tired of talking about the Animals. And he didn't sugarcoat anything. He said that it was thrown together and they had all the hits. And then it was a hellish existence for 2 years of just driving in a van. And then when it was over, it was over. And Keith, I never knew this. I only found out about a year ago that Eric Burdon was in war and that he sang Spill the Wine.
Oh, I knew that since the 70s.
I had no idea.
Eric Burdon in war. Yeah, I mean, Spill the Wine, Get That Girl. Yeah. What a classic. Oh, we actually opened for Eric Burdon in Inglewood at the Bergen Performing Arts Center a couple of years ago. He was great, man. He came into our dressing room. I think he was loaded. And he must have been, well, I mean, let's say this was 2014. So he was probably maybe in his 60s then, right? Maybe 70s?
Yeah. You're the guy who goes way back with Eric Burdon.
Well, no, I mean, we did that one gig with him. And I think we did a phoner with him on the ballroom. But, you know, there's interviews in here with members of the Stones and the Animals and Herman's Hermits and The Who. And, you know, another great book from Mark Voger, Britmania, The British Invasion of the 60s in Pop Culture. It's out there now. We're just getting started. And now we're going to go back to Mark Voger's playlist. With all that talk about the Kinks, why don't you pick something from the Kinks right now?
Yeah, thank you, Keith. You really got me as the one, of course, but I just thought, let's just shine a light on a slightly lesser known, but it's not, everybody knows this one. It's right there in the vein. It's got that raw edge. It's called All Day and All the Night.
Keith Roth, Mark Voger, my co-host here in the Electric Ballroom.
This is Dave Davies, and you're with Keith on the Electric Ballroom.
Ah! Hi, this is Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick, and you're listening to Keith on the Electric Ballroom. What a show. What a show.
Hey, kids. This is Joey Ramone from the Ramones, and you're listening to Keith on the Electric Ballroom.
Hi, this is Johnny Ramone of the Ramones, and you can hear the Ramones and all the best in rock and roll right here with Keith on Electric Ballroom.
Hey, kids, this is CJ Ramone of the world-famous Ramones, and you're listening to Keith on the Electric Ballroom.
Hey, this is Marky Ramone, and you're listening to Keith on the Electric Ballroom.
Hi, this is Joe Strummer, and you're listening to Keith on the Electric Ballroom.
It's Keith Roth, Mark Voger in the Electric Ballroom. And we'll be back after these commercials. Don't touch that dial.
Hi, this is John Entwistle, and you're listening to the Electric Ballroom.
Keith Roth, Mark Voger, hanging out with me in the Electric Ballroom. Everybody pick up the new book, Britmania, the British Invasion of the 60s in Pop Culture. As I'm going to keep saying, it's one of those books that if you grew up in the 60s and you love the Beatles and the Stones, and it was just like going through your DNA, and you bought everything, and you saw all the ads, it's all in there. It'll bring back great memories. And, you know, everybody's envious of people that did grow up in that timeline. It'll make you even more envious that you didn't grow up in such a wonderful time. We were talking before about how you obtained certain records. What was the first record you ever bought with your own money?
Oh my gosh. You know, I think it was Time of the Season by the Zombies of 45 RPM. So that would have been 1969. Okay. And my first Beatles album, and it's still my favorite. Nobody ever picks this as their favorite. It's Let It Be, because it was my it was their last album, but it was my first. My big brother, now deceased, got it for me. He was 19 years older than me, and he got it for me for Christmas one year. And so all those songs, Two of Us, I Dig a Pony, I Mean Mine, that was my first Beatles album, you know.
What a great album.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And then, of course, it's been forgotten, but thanks to the Peter Jackson docuseries, The Beatles Get Back, now everybody, you know, is like, oh, let's listen to that album, you know.
I love that album. The one memory I have of that one, it was a cutout for a long time. I don't know if you remember that.
Of course.
Yeah, and so it was like, you know, it was one of those days, if you went into the record store with your friends, you didn't have the $4.99 or the $5.99 for what everybody was buying at that time, Aerosmith or Cheap Trick or Van Halen, you know, my generation growing up, you'd always see Let It Be for $2.99. And you're like, you know what? I like the Beatles. And I'll never forget buying that record along with the Guess Who album, which was $1. The black cover, which is like all the negatives pictures on there. I was just completely blown away. I mean, obviously you knew the hits off of Let It Be, but just to dive into what, you know, I guess you could call them deep tracks. It's right up there. And my favorite Beatles record is Abbey Road. If I had to take one, that's the one I'm taking.
Yeah. I mean, that's the funny thing that I did was when I started making long cutting money and I was getting a little older, then I would go to the Echelon Mall, Franklin Music, and I'd buy these Beatles albums that were by now 10 years old, you know? So Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, you know, I probably first listened to it in like 71, you know, the White Album, not much later. So I was like, you know, becoming a Beatle freak in the 70s, in my teens.
Perfect.
And, you know, that's one way to do it, you know?
As I say, better late than pregnant, right?
Oh, I gotta steal that one.
Be my guest. You know who stole it? I'm gonna do a little name drop. And even though Clint Eastwood has been on me to stop doing that, Brian Johnson from AC/DC. I had the honors of doing the big AC/DC when they did that Power Up record. So they appointed me to do the interview, and they were all there, but Cliff Williams showed up late. And he came in and goes, oh, I'm really sorry, man. And he sat down and I said, well, better late than pregnant. And Brian Johnson exploded. And he goes, you know, I'm going to use that in adult conversation. That's what he said. He goes, you know, so if Brian Johnson's around Sarasota, Florida, stealing my line, I'm taking the credit for it.
Keith, it's a badge of honor to have cracked up Brian Johnson. I'd put it on the gravestone.
You know, I have another great Brian Johnson story. Back in the day, in the early 90s, we were on MTV on the Headbangers Ball. And when Brian Johnson was the host with Ricky Rackman, and I could tell anybody that he is the nicest, coolest. You would think that this guy just like, I don't know, like worked at an auto body shop. Or, you know, I mean, he was just so down to earth and just so cool. You'd never think that he's a singer in one of the biggest bands in rock and roll history, period. He's awesome. But we're here to talk about your book, Britmania, which is another amazing book. Now, the last time, though, you came down, I think you had just written Holly Jolly, right?
Yeah, that was a Christmas book. They all have the same approach. It's like taking a moment in pop culture where there's a lot of visuals. So Britmania and Holly Jolly, like those books, there's just so much to, because I designed the books as well. There's like so much visual information involved with all of these British bands, like all their 45 RPM picture sleeve art, and like I said, they're the Beatles dolls, the Beatles lunchbox. So it was like putting it all together and trying to make it make sense somehow.
Beautiful book, and thank you for using some of my quotes that made my day. You know, when I first got this book came out in September, right?
Actually, it dropped on October 5th, which was exactly the 60th anniversary of the Beatles' first single, "Love Me Do," and it was the day that the first James Bond movie, Dr. No, came out. So that date, October 5th, 1962, was like synchronicity for the Brits. Their two biggest cultural exports, the Beatles and James Bond, dropped on the exact same day.
Amazing. You know, I never knew that. What is your favorite James Bond movie?
Let's see. It should be Goldfinger, but I have a soft spot for the one he did when he came back with Jill St. John in the bikini. oh, good Lord. It had Bambi and Thumper. I can't remember the name of the movie now. It's terrible.
So you're talking about the Sean Connery era.
Yeah, that was the one movie he made when he came back that I can't remember the name of. And he was a little jollier. It really wasn't as good as the 60s James Bond. It came out in 1970.
My favorite is Live and Let Die, by the way, Roger Moore.
Oh, wow.
Well, you know, I'm a freak for blaxploitation film. My favorite movies ever, you know, from Shaft, Superfly, Hell Up in Harlem, all the, you know, Three the Hard Way. So seeing that in that timeline and living in the Bronx in New York, you know, I was sitting in the theaters and watching Across 110th Street. And then all of a sudden, like 6 years old when that movie came out, and my dad's like, hey, I'm going to take off of work and we're going to go see the Live and Let Die movie. And I was just floored. And then he took me to Corvettes and I bought the soundtrack with McCartney and Wings, which I still proudly have that vinyl. And I witnessed a fight in Camden, not New Jersey, but Camden, London. Two geezers were sitting at the bar and they were saying, well, you know, no doubt Sean Connery was the greatest James Bond ever. And the other guy goes, well, he was great, but Roger Moore, because Live and Let Die was the best film. And he goes, no, it wasn't. You know, and they're going back and forth. I mean, they got the gin blossoms. They got the whole thing going on. And next thing they know, they start swinging at each other. And they're on the floor. I mean, we're witnessing this, you know. And the bartender's like, it happens every night. Don't worry about it. It happens every night, if whether it's James Bond or it's, you know, whatever the case may be. Interesting that your book came 60 years to the day where Bond got introduced and the Beatles got introduced. I do remember, though, when you were here for Holly Jolly, you were one of the first people I saw, because they were loosely letting people out into the world. And we got together at the Electric Ballroom Batcave, WRET Studios, and we're both wearing the masks. And I know that you have avoided COVID. You were one of the few people that were able to avoid COVID.
Yeah, it's my training. I worked for almost 2 years in the dietary services department of Sunrise Senior Living, and they had this protocol that would keep you safe, and it did. And so I still follow it to this day. I just masking and social distancing, I still do it. And people still come up to me and say, why are you wearing a mask? You know, but actually COVID's on the uptick again, you know, hey, so.
You've been vaccinated, right?
Sure.
I've been vaccinated. You know, some of the people that got the vid with me wound up in the hospital. You never know how it's going to react to you. So, and this was back in May. It's not even a year ago. It was only like 6-7 months ago. So you just never know. It's better to be safe. And obviously, if you were able to avoid it at this time, keep doing what you're doing, because what you're doing is obviously working for you. Austin Powers. Now, what do you think of the Austin Powers movies?
Oh, my God. I love them. I love them with all my heart. You know, the thing that's amazing about it is that, you know, the way he's styled, okay, it's a James Bond parody, but right away, he's styled like Peter Asher from Peter and Gordon, who's in Britmania, sorry. And, you know, he's got the flouncy, frilly thing around his neck, cravat, and the orange hair and the big Goonie glasses that I'm wearing now. And so it's just like, well, James Bond never wore that stuff, or none of the super spies did. But yes, that is a definite Britishism from the 60s. So he was like mixing it up, you know. Sometimes I think he goes a little overboard with the scatological humor, but I'm in for part four, if it ever happens.
No, I hear it is. It is happening. Well, right now we were talking earlier about Eric Burdon. We're going to get back to your playlist. By the way, we kicked off this segment with Can't Explain from The Who. But right now, we're going to play Eric Burdon. So what Animals tune you want to play, Mark?
For the Animals, I thought I'd pick It's My Life because there was something about that song was written by American composers, but it was Eric Burdon's plaintive howl that really brought the lyrics alive. Those Animals hits, the ones that David Johansen mixed up into a
medley.
Medley, thank you. They talk about poverty. They talked about mortality, and it was really deep stuff for Top 40 in the 1960s. And it really sounded like a voice from another world. It's My Life, the Animals.
Keith Roth, Mark Voger, my co-host here in the Electric Ballroom.
Hi there, this is Eric Burdon, and you're listening to Keith on the Electric Ballroom. So stay tuned for more great music.
A lot of people say a pair of tight pants is like a cheap hotel. Why do they say that? No ballroom. But you're listening to Keith on Electric Ballroom with me, David Johansen.
What's up, everybody? This is Dave Navarro with Keith Roth, Electric Ballroom. Keep it here.
This is Noddy Holder from Slade with Keith on the Electric Ballroom. You just gotta keep on rocking!